a new gay marriage ruling, how it affects the governor. The mayor embraces a commuter tax, the Mounds Reservoir debate, and Loretta Rush takes over as Chief Justice. That plus an effort to protect National Guardsmen in Indiana, honesty in Indianapolis, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 22, 2014. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Attorney General Greg Zeller announced that he will appeal a federal judge's ruling that same-sex marriages performed in other states must be recognized here in Indiana. Federal Judge Richard Young made the ruling. He's the same judge who ruled in June that Indiana's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional. This time, he ruled in favor of Michelle and Shannon Bowling, who were married legally in Iowa in 2011. They sued earlier this year to have their marriage recognized here. Here are gay marriage advocates Kyle McGrath and Steve Ulrey.
Over 30 positive rulings, local and nationally, are any indication of what's to come. We're feeling confident.
It's all happening very quickly, and I take it as a positive sign that Indiana is moving along better than we all expected it would.
Is this the beginning of the end of the marriage debate? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Jennifer Wagner, what was most significant about this ruling?
Well, I think there are a couple things. As Kyle alluded to in that video clip, there's a lot of momentum for marriage equality, for the freedom to marry nationally. We've seen two rulings from Judge Young. And I think, politically speaking, Judge Young spoke to Governor Pence's reversal on state agencies recognizing these marriages that were performed here, which I think is significant in the state of Indiana to show a judge saying, hey, you are involved in this, you do have a say, and I'm going to go ahead and deem this unconstitutional.
But what he said was the governor can be named in the lawsuit.
Right, where he previously had not wanted to bring him into this because the governor had not made any statement on whether the marriages would be recognized.
He's talking about the memo that was sent to state agency heads saying when the first ruling was stayed that you should observe existing Indiana law. Is this a problem for the governor?
No. In fact, the governor, every time there's been a ruling of any kind, he's put out a form that said, follow the law, follow what the law is, and that's all he did here. And the governor is never the appropriate person to put in a lawsuit when you're suing state government because that person has not been affected by the governor directly. And so that's never going to stand. It's never going to happen that way. The attorney general believes that very strongly, as does every other attorney general in the United States. It's not the governor. And when lawyers put the governor's name in a lawsuit, they're doing it to bring attention to that lawsuit because, in fact, everybody always rules that it's not the governor that's been involved directly in the legal proceedings.
Do you think the judge was trying to pick a fight?
I'm not sure why he's doing what he's doing on this one, but I think he was right to go ahead and make the stay in this particular ruling
until we
find out what's going to happen. But we all know that this is not going to be decided until the Supreme Court of the United States makes a decision that's going to affect everybody. And we're headed in that direction. We've been talking about that here
right.
for months, and that's what's going to happen.
Well, when Judge Young made his initial ruling regarding the legality of same-sex marriage in Indiana, he didn't stay it. This time, he issued it and stayed it at the same time. Does that tell you anything?
Well, I think it just says that the appeals court had already stepped in on the previous ruling and decided to stay it. I think he would be sort of thumbing his nose at the appeals court if he had decided not to stay it. So I think it made sense in this case.
One more brick in the wall.
Yeah, I think that's essentially what we're seeing here, because Mike's exactly right. Until the Supreme Court decides to take it up this fall or next spring or whenever it decides to take it up, this issue is going to go on. The remarkable thing is a couple of things. One is the near unanimity in all of these cases in favor of gay marriage, and that's not just in Indiana, it's around the country. And the other thing is, going back to the point that Jennifer and Mike were talking about and the governor and the judge, in the previous lawsuit, the governor had been stricken by the judge. The judge had taken him out of there. And in this case, the judge was included, or the governor was included, for the same reason Mike was talking about, for the attention. But because of the executive order, the governor's argument had always been, he's not the appropriate person. Well, after the initial decision, the governor's executive order was issued saying what should be done, and the judge said, well, then that makes him a party to this. And then that's why he included
him. But he issued a similar statement after the judge's ruling.
Right.
Right?
I mean, both times saying follow the law.
Yeah.
And the judge has interpreted that as he has executive power in this case and could decide. I mean, this is the inference from what the judge said, and could decide to say, we'll recognize these marriages. That's a decision he could make.
And the attorney general is the governor's attorney in these cases, not the governor's counsel who put out the
memorandum. Governor could have made the decision to recognize those hundreds of couples, to give them the same recognition under state law that they have under federal law. And he chose not to. And
look, the attorney general of the state of Indiana has to go out and defend the laws that are passed by the legislature. And this is still the law of the state
but
of Indiana.
But for 3 days, it wasn't. That's the point.
For three days, it wasn't. You know as well as I do, state government doesn't work that fast that you can reorganize all of the cogs of state government that you have to do, including
forms for different departments and
everything
Mike?
Else.
Well, didn't Indiana University do a study and
why
say
you
that
gotta
there,
wait.
Were, there were hundreds, if not
thousands, 600 and some odd, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. References to marriage in the Indiana
but,
Code.
But the bottom line is, and the Attorney General says this time and time and time again, but he has discretion in these matters. And when the judge ruled, he could have said, okay, the judge has ruled and it's over. And then the state could have adapted its codes and done what it needed to do to come into compliance with the judge's order. It chose to go against that and to challenge
and
it.
But
he also appealed it, and so then if you win the appeal, you've got to go back and undo
and all that stayed by the court.
And this is a law that passed in Indiana almost unanimously when it was passed.
Yeah, and now it doesn't have that much support if you look at the public
opinion.
But
until
here's the
court strikes it completely, it's the law of the land.
We're sitting here talking about laws and legal arguments and judges. Yeah. These are real people.
Yeah, and that's right.
And they deserve
and
to be recognized under state law.
And we
they
are a body
but
of
they,
law.
Well, I mean, in fairness, the legislators were representing real people when they passed the law. I mean, whether or not the law needs to be changed now or will be changed or could be changed doesn't change the fact that people who were elected by Hoosiers made that law.
Moving on, Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard is calling for tax hikes to hire more police officers. In a budget plan produced this week, he suggested the creation of a commuter tax. The mayor believes that people who live outside Marion County and come here to work should pay at least a portion of their local income taxes to Marion County. If that's approved in 2015, he would rescind a hike in the public safety tax and the elimination of the homestead tax credit, tax hikes that he hopes will pass locally in the meantime. But consider this. The Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce has been pushing for a commuter tax since 2006, and President Michael Huber says winning approval will be, in his words, very difficult.
Of course, it is a controversial topic anytime you talk about a new tax or reallocation of a tax. But our members, which are almost 2,500 businesses, really get it.
You're going to have a Republican legislature raise taxes on essentially the Republican base in the state of Indiana. I see that happening. Never.
And that's Democrat Dan Parker on a previous episode of Indiana Week in Review. Mike McDaniel, can you explain the mayor's strategy here?
Well, yeah. I mean, I see this as a situation where for the last 3 years, he's had Democrat counsel turn him down when he asked for more money for police officers, as an example. And I think this comes out of the frustration of putting this budget together, knowing that you don't have the resources to do what you need to do. And they have talked about this for a long time, and the Indianapolis Chamber has been trying to get this done since, 2006?
2006.
And on the same show with Dan Parker, I said politics is the art of the possible.
Right.
And this one doesn't look all that possible. Well, for the very reason Dan stated there, it's difficult to get people in the legislature to pass this kind of tax on the donut counties in particular. And so realistically, it's going to be very difficult to do. But I think this is born out of the frustration of the mayor trying to get people to realize that we need more resources here. And if that means not a commuter tax, but that may help lead to the debate about the strains put on local government statewide that's going on over and over and over again.
But he's asking the city county council to pass two tax increases with a promise that he'll take them back if he gets the other one. So, I mean, they're going to put their necks on the line for that?
Headline, Greg Ballard loves tax increases, as you said in your lead-in. True story. Maybe he should have hired a lobbying firm to help persuade the council Democrats the last 3 years. I don't know how that would have worked out. But, you know, I think there is a debate to be had about whether or not we need to increase revenue to pay for more public safety officers. We do. Where has that debate been the last 6 years? You know, Mike wants to say it's been 3 years and he's tried and tried and tried. Well, can't he get anything done as mayor?
Well, not with the Democrat council.
The strategy is baffling, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly not one that seems like it will win the hearts and minds of the people who have to vote, because if they pass the tax increases, the likelihood of a commuter tax passing the legislature anytime soon is very slim. And so, you know, the quid pro quo, if you will, in this deal isn't likely to happen. So I think there is a need to look at the structure. Mike talked about that. I think the legislature is open to it, and the governor's effort to streamline and reform taxes might offer an entree for some kind of a regional tax or structure like that. But it's a far cry.
A lot of people will tell you that local governments, not just Indianapolis, local governments are strapped in this state, in part because of the property tax caps. And there may be a need to look at ways to completely redo the system of local government financing. Is that more likely than a commuter tax?
I'm not sure it's more likely. I mean, the truth is the reason that we have the property tax caps is because people were so frustrated about taxes. It's hard to imagine that people are suddenly going to change their mind. But at the same time, the Indianapolis and the regional counties, whether or not a commuter tax is the appropriate thing to do, I don't know. But they have to start thinking about Central Indiana as a region and not as a city with suburbs.
And they need to understand, 200,000 people come into Marion County to work, 50,000 go out, and their taxes would follow them.
$200 million in income taxes leave this county every day.
Yeah, all right. There's a new alternative this week to plans to dam the White River and create a 2,100-acre Mounds Lake Reservoir in Madison County. It comes from opponents who would rather see the Mounds Greenway created. It would be a multi-use trail system stretching from Anderson to Muncie. The Hoosier Environmental Council and Heart of the White River groups say their plan would cost a fraction of the $450 million reservoir project, but would still create opportunities for new waterfront businesses and properties while protecting the environment. Here's Tim Maloney of HEC.
Our plan does not depend on damaging the environment to create economic activity and recreation opportunities. It proposes to protect the environment and then in that context offer recreation and economic opportunities.
John Katzenberger, which one of those projects is most likely to be completed?
Well, it's interesting. The HEC's plan is clearly the yang to the Mounds Lake Yin because it's so different approach. And it also costs a fraction, wouldn't take nearly the permitting, wouldn't take as long to get done. But it also wouldn't lead to the water resources that they hope for. So I think if either one of them happens, it's likely that Mounds Lake will happen, but there's still a long way to go before it's done.
And so is this offered as an alternative, or is it a way to mitigate the size of the Mounds Lake project?
I think it's offered as an alternative. But what this points to is the larger issue that Indiana's facing down the road about whether there's going to be enough water. I mean, the chamber did a study recently, and the legislature has been sort of looking at this issue for quite a while now, but not really doing that much about it. But the larger issue of thinking about Indiana's water resources in the future and what they'll mean, and this may bring that issue finally to the forefront.
There's not a lot of awareness of either one of these projects at the moment, is there?
No, not yet, but there will be. Look, this almost relates to what we just talked about, the regionalism going on here. Central Indiana is the fastest growing region in Indiana, and we're going to need water. And we're competing regionally with cities like Cleveland, Louisville, Chicago, you know, places like that that are sitting on bodies of water, St. Louis, major bodies of water. And we don't have that. We have the White River. And so we have to be ready for what's coming in the future to compete with those different cities. And this would be 10.5 billion gallons of water, what they're proposing here, close by. So economic development, it's a home run. Water for the future, it's a home run. You do this for the future of the Central Indiana region. You combine that with things like the Commerce Connector, the debate over mass transit to bring in the other parts of the region. Then you see how the future of Indiana looks, and now we're going to compete. And this is just one of those key components of that kind of competition.
What's the objection to a reservoir?
You know, I have to assume that it's based on environmental preservation and wanting to make sure that, you know, the trees are still there and these acres that would be flooded are preserved, and I understand that. You know, I'm a liberal. I love trees and rivers as much as the next person, but I completely understand the concern about our water resources and a long-term supply of water for Central Indiana. I think this is a good debate to be had, and I think you're right. We haven't had enough conversation about this issue overall, but at the end of the day, we have to have water.
Let me just add to that. 8 taxing units have voted on moving forward on this project. 1 person of those 8 taxing units that are affected voted no. Everybody else was unanimous. So it looks like it's coming in a hurry.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, which is a better idea, the Mounds Greenway or the Mounds Lake Reservoir? Your choices are A, Greenway, B, Reservoir, or C, Leave Well Enough Alone. Last week's question was, should the Pence administration pay adoption subsidies retroactively to 2009? 64% said yes. 21% said no, 15% said only if ordered by a judge. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Loretta Rush took over this week as Chief Justice of the Indiana Supreme Court. Governor Mike Pence gave her the oath of office in a small private ceremony at the State House, and afterwards, she said that her top priority is to increase trust in the court system.
That anyone standing outside a courtroom when they go in expects and deserves fair treatment.
She was the best choice to lead the best state Supreme Court in America as its Chief Justice today.
Leslie Weidenbender, she's the first woman in this role and could have made a big deal out of this ceremony. She chose to make it small and private. What do you think of that approach?
Well, I think that it goes along with everything she said since she was selected, where she's trying to play down the fact that this is a historic appointment in the fact that she's a woman. I don't think she wants that to be the focus of what we're talking about. Of course, we keep talking about it anyway because it is important, and it is important for the court to reflect the larger population. But I'm not surprised at all that she did not want to make a big deal about it.
I think it's interesting because we are going to talk about it regardless, right. but she doesn't like to.
Well, I think that she recognizes, too, that we're at a point of transition in the court, and it's a big job. You know, there are a lot of things that she needs to consider, and it seems like a very deliberate approach. Rather than trying to make a big splash, she say, okay, let me figure out what I need to do. We'll figure out what we're going to do, and then we'll do it. And, yeah, I like that approach. Good for her.
I appreciate the approach, but I'm just going to say, as a woman and a lawyer, and I know the woman whose chair I'm sitting in is a woman and a lawyer, I think it's a big deal, and I'm glad to see her.
Would you like to have seen a bigger ceremony?
No, I think she's approaching this the right way, knowing that we're all still going to talk about it. But I think it is a big deal for female attorneys and for, you know, people who are considering the profession of law to see her as a role model in that job.
So she True. Should grasp the mantle, as it were. You ever heard of a private ceremony for a Chief Justice being sworn?
Well, it kind of reminds me of what Joanne Gore did when she became president of Ball State. Instead of having a big soiree and trying to bring all that attention, she decided to get to work. And I think that's what you're seeing here with the new Chief Justice. I think she's going to be an outstanding leader of this court and will be there for a long, long time. And We've been very fortunate in Indiana to have a very collegial court that worked together well for a long time, and I think you're going to continue to see that here.
Yeah, it's a five-year term. She said to her fellow justices at the ceremony that she hopes to be working with them for many, many, many years.
And I think she means it, too.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit funny to call it a private ceremony when all the media was invited in. So it was a small ceremony. I'm not sure how private I would call it.
It wasn't open to the
public.
They didn't.
That's right. State lawmakers are proposing a new plan that is aimed at increasing consumer protections for members of the media. This week, Attorney General Greg Zeller, Greg Zeller and lawmakers called for Indiana Service Members Civil Relief Act. It would provide state remedies for violations of the federal act, which allows current National Guardsmen and reservists to suspend or postpone certain obligations. Those include debt collections, foreclosures, and some lease or service terminations. Adjutant General Martin Umbarger.
I will tell you that there's individuals and organizations out there that like to prey on both specters of life, those that are young and are elderly. In our case, the preponderance of those that wear the uniform are not generals. They're privates. They're airmen. They're sailors, 18 to 25. Sometimes right out of high school, it's the first job that they've had an opportunity to deploy. So they get preyed upon.
Jennifer Wagner, who would stand in the way of that?
Well, certainly not me. I think it's a good proposal, and I'm going to use my response here to give a shameless shout-out to my favorite U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly, who has done a lot in his stead in that role to help service members dealing with mental illness and the suicide prevention area that he has worked in. We can't do enough for these folks. They give their lives, they give their, oftentimes years and years to our country, and this is good legislation.
Interesting that they're rolling it out in August.
Why is that?
Well, the legislature doesn't come in until January.
Well,
right?
Look, I think it's important to do that anytime you can do it because there's so much about the military in the news today. And with everything that's going on around the world, it's just a good time to underline the fact that there are people actually who try to take advantage of these people when they're serving our country, yeah. And that's wrong. And the federal government wasn't always acting on this issue the way they should and making sure it was administered properly. And so we're about the fourth state to do this, and with Senator Glick and Representative Baird and Greg Zeller, I'd be stunned if this does not pass the legislature unanimously next year. And it should be done. We have to protect these people and what they're doing for our country.
Agreed?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, there's no doubt that when a service person goes out overseas, it makes it very hard for them to deal with a lot of issues that they have back home. And I think what they're doing is certainly a legitimate way to try to help folks. Now, it's interesting, as you were talking about how this might just kind of fly through the legislature. It probably will, and for very good reason. But sometimes when these bills fly through the legislature like that, they don't really get they don't get a good look. And so sometimes it's harder to find all the little things that unintended consequences.
Well, and sometimes somebody sees a bill that's flying and tries to tack something on it.
That's true, too.
Well, but that would be a little like what Mike was talking about, and that's preying on the military. And there's a special place in hell for the people who do that. And I think any legislator who tries to slow this down by putting a pet project in it would probably be in that same boat.
Finally, Indianapolis is one of the most honest cities in the country, according to an annual experiment. The Honest Tea Company put people to the test by setting up unattended stands of tea. People were asked to pay $1 for a bottle of tea using the honor system. Hidden monitors tracked the results. Indianapolis ranked 14 most honest at 97%. Mike McDaniel, I don't know where they set that up, but if you moved it to the State House, would you get the same result?
Only thing I can figure, we got 97%, which is outstanding. The only thing I can figure is that there were some Kentucky basketball fans in town.
Oh, wow.
Maybe that's why we didn't get 100%.
14th, is that good?
That seems pretty good to me. And if you set it up the State House, again, we'd probably have a contract lobbyist within half an hour, out there talking to people about whether or not they should or shouldn't give the $1.
Now, be careful.
I'm teasing you, Mike. Come on. I'm teasing.
I think it'd be a far more interesting experiment if they put some beer out there.
There you go.
But not on a Sunday.
Well, maybe twice on Sunday.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at IceMiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.